following announcement has been paid for by the New World Order.
All right, welcome to another edition of the Filthy FRB Show for Sunday, June 21st. And Tom, I got the date right, so I'm getting better at this. But we're joined by UFC bantamweight contender Jessica I. What's up, Jessica?
What's going on, guys? How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good. I already have two Coors Lights in front of me, and I got nothing to do today, so I'm happy. How about you, Tom?
I'm doing okay. I mean, you know the deal, Brian. I got some sort of infection, so not the best weekend for me. And I just got back from a really shitty MMA show yesterday, so I'm down in the dumps a little bit. But
you know,
you need a Coors Light. You need one of those Coors Lights.
You know. Jess, I tried to tell Tom to stay away from those Vegas women, and he won't listen to me. Now he's got an infection.
Too many of them ratchet girls out there.
But, FarmersOnly.com is killing it out here, Brian.
You know, it's amazing. I don't know where they get their ad budget from, but Farmers Only, I mean, they're advertising during everything. You know, like NBA finals, like. Jessica, have you seen these commercials? It's a real website.
No, I was actually going to ask you, but I think I may have heard about it. Is that like the dating website? No?
Yeah, for farmers.
I did actually hear about that. Like last week, someone else was telling me about it because I'm originally from the country. So someone was like, well, you're single, Jess. Why don't you sign up for that? And I was like, how about no?
Well, you definitely should. There's some very eligible bachelors on there, such as Cal.
I don't want to date my dad. Okay, I don't want to do that.
You know, now that's a perfect segue. We might have someone for you, Jessica. Tom has a friend named Frank. And he's going to be in Chicago for Tom's fight because you guys are on the same card. And he's a nice guy, good looking guy, and he's a strength and conditioning coach for a major Division I university, their football program. And he's a big Jessica I fan.
Well, that's awesome of him, but I'm going to be really busy that week taking care of beating up my my Saturday night date, but maybe afterwards.
Tell us about Misha Tate, because I think she was pissing you off a little bit, like tagging you in all her tweets and her Instagram. Like, did that kind of get under your skin a little bit?
I mean, she's doing it because she thinks that like it's going to affect my performance. But it's almost like do you take a stick and you poke the beehive? Eventually, all the bees come out. So she can irritate me, and you know she can tag me and post, and they're all like selfies though. Like they're like it's not of her like punching her sparring partner and like hurting him. Like she's tagging me in selfies, and I'm like, come on, girl, like. First of all, I'm straight. Secondly, like, stop tagging me in all your selfies. And I feel like she's wasting a little bit more of her own mental audacity than she is mine.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's definitely been a kind of a controversial figure within the female MMA scene. And Jessica, you've been someone that's been now you're a pretty well known figure in the UFC. But you got your start in major, you know, national promotions with Bellator. And, you know, you're one of the few people, Brian and I were talking about this, you're one of the few fighters where they've come over from Bellator and the UFC's actually gotten behind them and putting a push behind them. Are there any, like, major differences? I'm sure there's a lot of differences between the way that Bellator was run under, you know, Bjorn Remney and, you know, how the things with the UFC are.
Well, other than like those, yeah, obviously the whole Bjorn Remney and Dana White, I mean, that's night and day. I mean, they're not even remotely the same kinds of people, let alone business, you know, business people. But there was a lot of differences. You know, the fact that the way the organization was ran, you know, and I think I was very, very fortunate. Back when I originally signed with Bellator, my contract, which most people, since I only had three fights with them, didn't realize I was under contract with them for like 3.5 years. But while I was under contract with them and had three fights, I also had five fights in the NWFS. That's why my pro record, I have so many fights. But back when I made my early pro debut, Strikeforce made a big run at me to come up to 35. They wanted me to fight Jan Finney. They wanted me to fight Misha in the Grand Prix. So my name's been out there. Sean Shelby's known about me for years. Like, I always tease him. I still have this voicemail from like 7 years ago that he called and left for me and was inquiring about me coming up to 35. I just always made the cut because it was working for me and I was making a lot of money. I made a lot of money as a young pro in the NWFS and a lot of money in Bellator because of where the shows took place, and I was able to sell tickets. So I was still making the money off that. So people, I feel like, in the MMA industry have known me. I'm just finally getting the national exposure, you know, especially going against, you know, a girl like Misha who already has that exposure. I think that she's got some miles on her when it comes to the MMA world. I think I preserved my career the right way and my body the right way. That's why I'm ready to take the spotlight right now.
Yeah, Misha hasn't just, she hasn't preserved her body. I mean, she's actually enhanced it. Have you noticed that?
Well, yeah, I mean, she got a boob job.
Because I thought it was funny. She said, oh, yeah, I need to take some time off to kind of get my the mental side of my career right. It's like, no, you're recovering from surgery.
So you know what? It's like, and everyone has their choice. And I know all the women, you know, like, the women's MMA and women's sports, women in general, and any type of public figure, they're either one of two ways. They promote themselves in like a classier, kind of more professional way, or they go that route where they need to flaunt themselves and gloat about themselves. And I feel like that's the kind of person she is. That's not the kind of person I am. And that's also not the kind of person the UFC champ is, Ronda Rousey. She's, you know, like, she makes her provocative photo shoots very elegant and classy. I think she does a great job of it, where I feel like every time you watch Misha, it just looks dirty.
Wow. So, I mean, Tom, you've taken some very weird pictures with Seth Petruzzelli, and sometimes they haven't always been so classy and elegant. So maybe you should learn a little bit from Jessica, from her comments, and present yourself in a better way.
Well, yeah, I mean, Brian, if that's the case, you know, I would much rather look like Jessica in my pictures than I do myself. So, you know,
I just think it's different for women. I think it's different for women, you guys. Like, I genuinely, like, I think that the guys can get away with a little bit more, but like the women, like, okay, how many of your followers are people that are actually following you because you're a good athlete and you're making an impression on the world? Or how many of those people are just following you because they think your boobs look nice and a tight top?
And, you know, I mean, go ahead, Tom.
Brian, I think I fall into that second category actually more than the first one. Because, you know, like, I never get messages on Twitter or social media from followers saying, like, hey, man, big fan of your fighting style. You know, it's always something else. So, it's kind of my passion.
Listen, it's nice to have both. It's nice to have both. I mean, listen, as females, we always want to look pretty and don't want to lose our femininity, but. I mean, my gosh, you can only glorify fighting so much in this sport, right?
Yeah.
Fighting. it's fighting.
And I've seen, and it's kind of obvious what she's going after. I've seen some of her Instagram, like, their pictures of her feet, and she's going after a very subculture that are, like, really into that. It's so obvious what she's doing.
She
feeds off of it. It feeds off it. And I get it, like. I mean, I post pictures of me training and stuff like that because that's what my fans want to see. Unfortunately, I don't feed into just people wanting to see your feet or whatever. I mean, she enjoys that attention. Good for her. I mean, I know that's when people on Twitter are like, oh, you're going to get your ass beat by Misha. I'm like, all right, you're the crazy guy that loves her big right toe, so I don't care.
But I will, yeah. I mean, I hope it's not like I'm beating up on Misha too much. I don't really have anything against her. The last time I saw Caraway, I actually thought he was a really nice guy. You know,
I've never heard that from anybody, so you're the first person to ever say that.
Maybe.
And that's no joke, and I'm not even being sarcastic or even rude about it. I mean, the first time I ever met Misha and Brian was at Stipe's debut in Texas, and they both weren't nice to me, and I was just some measly little 125er working their way up.
Jessica, you gotta consider the source when you're considering that comment that Brian just made. Because how many people come up to you and go like, "Oh, that front row Brian, that's a really nice guy."
Yeah, I don't think.
Well, I've never had anybody come up and say that he was mean or he was somebody else. I think the only thing I've ever heard is when my coach came up to me in Arizona and was like, "I kicked him in the leg."
Oh yeah, that was bad. Yeah, I was.
Yeah, Marcus goes, "Well, I didn't realize that you were there." Marcus is like, "You know, front row Brian, I just kicked him in the leg," and I go, "What? What just happened?"
No, but that was in good fun though. That was in good fun. I mean, that was a long day. I was, indulging in some drinks with Brian Rogers at the
which
show.
Is very easy to do because Brian loves he loves his drinks and loves to have fun, and Brian is the perfect guy to do that with.
Yeah, that was a good time. Tom, what were you going to say?
I'm not really sure. I forget.
Oh, yeah, but yeah, he kicked me in the leg, but I think I asked him to. Like, I wanted to.
You did?
Yeah, I wanted to see, like. And you know, I was sore. My leg was sore for about 2 weeks.
Marcus is actually, like, the king of that. Like, he does that to everybody. He'll go over and, like, limp leg people by kicking them. You won't even know. Like, he'll just be like, "Oh, better be ready. Better be ready."
So, you know, let's just say you beat Misha, you know. And you're kind of in an interesting spot because Dana was saying, you know, Cyborg's fight on July 9th is her last fight at 145 pounds. So I assume in December, if they get this thing in New York done, they want to do Ronda versus Cyborg, Madison Square Garden. So,
Brian, are you sure, like, they didn't mean that Cyborg's going to move up a weight class? Are you sure they meant she's going to go down?
Well, that's possible. That's possible. But, you know, if she does get to 35, I mean, she's going to look like Vitor. She's going to look like the current incarnation of Vitor.
You know, you have to wonder. You have to wonder, though. You know, like, you have to wonder about dropping weight classes like that and what it does to your body. And, you know, bottom line, a girl that weighs in 135 pounds weighs 135 pounds. Like, there's no, like, I don't see it happening. I've had conversation with me, Dana, and Rhonda. We're in Boston for South by Southwest when we were out there, and I know where the UFC has. I know the UFC has plans for me. I just have to be the one to make sure that the plans that they have get executed, and I have to be the one to kind of take my own destiny in my own hands and win these fights and give them no choice. I mean, right now, I personally have myself going into this fight 3-0 in the UFC. I have a crappy overturn that was complete bullshit. I have a second loss that I did not have myself losing, and I will not take it away from Alexis, but that fight will, not that I want to fight her again, but I didn't lose that fight. I didn't lose that fight. And then my third fight, people don't even look at the numbers. I was beating the Sandra Leslie before her ear couldn't take it anymore, and that's not my fault. So I know where I am, and I think the UFC knows, like, and they're not worried about the numbers that a fight versus Cyborg and Ronda, like, I just don't see it happening right now. Like, they love Ronda. This is all media hype. It's all media hype. They're not going to put Ronda with Cyborg, and if Cyborg does make it up, she's going to have to fight a couple other 35ers before they get the chance.
So, I mean, one of the things that works to your advantage, you know, like over Alexis, is you haven't fought Ronda yet, because a lot of the people that you could conceivably fight, Kat Zingano, Alexis Davis, Sarah McMahon, they've all been, you know, dispatched by Ronda, and I don't think there's any interest in a rematch. So you have something going for you that you're a fresh opponent.
Yeah, I do, and I think I bring a lot more to the table than what most people recognize, and it's okay. You know what I mean? I know that my presence is not as big as my purpose, and I genuinely believe that, and it's okay. It takes all the pressure off of me. Believe me, there's no pressure on me. Everyone's going to think I'm going to lose anyways. So what pressure is there to me? It's the pressure's on her to keep winning, to not, you know, not let anybody dethrone her, you know, and as a champion, you have to walk around with that target on your back. I'm the one with the arrow. You know what I mean? It's a lot easier for me. I know kind of what I'm up against, and I've always been up against things like that. I went up against it in Bellator, and Bellator robbed me of the title when I beat their champ. I've been there. I know what it's going to take. So I feel like all these other girls. Like, I've trained with Sarah McMahon. I've had other chances to interact with some of the other 35ers. Like, I know my competition, and I know that I know I'm the best candidate to beat Rousey. Misha needs to stop saying that, you know, she's the one who's been the most. I mean, if anything, she's the one who's lost her the most, got her arms broke the most. I mean, if that's how we're going to look at it, I mean, she's got that going for her. I mean, I think that's a lot more tallies in the negative than there is in the positive.
Yeah, you know, Tom, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, how many more times can they possibly promote Misha versus Ronda? I mean, we've seen it.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't like the old days UFC. You know what I mean? This isn't like where you could watch Chuck Liddell fight the same guy three times because you love Chuck and you love that guy. The divisions are too big. There's too many females that are coming into this sport and that are making ground, and too many guys. People don't want to see the same fight so many times. People want to see new things. They want to see new action. No one wants to see Misha and Ronda again. You know what I mean? Just like no one wants to see Cain Velasquez and Jr. again. I mean, everyone's seen it so many times. We've seen that fight. I mean, it's just, let's see something new. Let's know what fighting is the excitement. Not the same people have already fought each other.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I just think that they might be under pressure to put Cyborg in a title shot if she can make the weight. But it would make sense to make her fight somebody else.
It doesn't make sense, though. It doesn't make sense. She should have to go. I mean, I had to work my way up the rankings when I came up to 35. I had to start. I was like, I don't even think I was in the top 10 when I first started my first fight. And then as soon as I started fighting, I started moving up the rankings in the 35. I don't think she deserves to just be thrown in. Everyone gets judged based upon the way that you perform at 35. And when she gets here, she's a bottom feeder. She's got to work her way up, just like the rest of us have, and fight the right fights to get our chances. I really don't believe that they're going to throw a title shot right at her. I really don't. And to be honest, I don't even think she's making 35 anyways. And that's no knock on her as a person or as a fighter. I just don't see it. I've seen her personally. I think we all, I don't know, it's fine if you saw her when she was out there in Phoenix when Stipe fought, but there's no possibility of 35. I don't see it. I don't understand how the kid.
Yeah, it's funny. I did see her, and she was huge, and she wasn't.
She's tall. She's tall, too. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, she's not a tiny woman. She's tall.
She's probably about 5'8", 5'9", and maybe a, you know, she'll be 180, and she won't be fat.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, but at the same time, like, you're not, you there's just humanly not possible. And if she does make it down there, she's going to be cutting a lot of muscle, and when you get rid of muscle, you get rid of strength. I mean, you might have speed on your side, but you lose strength. And if that was her best attribute, which has always been her best attribute, was her strength, then what's there to fear?
So, Tom, you're on the Chicago card that Misha and Jessica are going to fight on. They're a little bit higher up on the card than you, though.
Yeah, what's your point? what are you getting at, man?
I don't know.
Well, here's the way I look at it, Brian, is that, you know, the people are going to tune in on TV. They're going to tune in on Fox. They're going to tune in on pay-per-view, regardless of what fights are on there. But not too many people tune in early to watch the prelims unless there's a special attraction. So that's why they have me lower on the card.
Right, yeah, because they want to build the audience. They want, yeah, it's all strategic. I can see that.
Yeah, wait till you get the quarter hour numbers for my my appearance on Fox.
But you know, I don't hear a lot of people talking about Dillashaw and Barreau too. And it's like, I don't know, maybe they don't believe Dillashaw will be healthy. He always seems to be injured, and Barreau, you know, it just feeds into this Brazilian stereotype. Always has a damn excuse every time for everything.
Yeah. Well, hey.
I think it's going to be a good fight between the two, but I think that the card came out with a lot more bang, and then when Jury and that fight kind of took a, you know, spot, like I feel like that kind of went off that. I personally think me and Misha are definitely going to be the crowd pleasers over there. Nothing against you, Tom. Nothing against you, but I definitely think that I'm very happy they put us as a co-main event. Very, very happy about that.
Well, I think you're underestimating the amount of females that will be in attendance in that crowd when you make that statement, because, you know, that's definitely going to...
I know my Puerto Ricans will be there. All my Puerto Rican girls will be there, and they're louder than Trish and anyone. You'll know where my fans are.
Well, why Puerto Ricans?
Because they're loud. I'm allowed to say that because I have a bunch of Puerto Rican friends, but they're extremely loud.
Oh, they're all...
Well, definitely, they... Oh, yeah, they're feisty.
So if I come out in the Puerto Rican flag for my
They'll cheer for you. My people will cheer for you.
Sweet.
They will. I'll make sure all the high believers are cheering for you. I think definitely, like, I couldn't be more excited for the fight being this close to Ohio. I know, I mean, we have tons of people going.
Yeah, Jessica, and, you know, for the viewers that, or what are they, listeners? Yeah, for the listeners out there, you know, Cleveland's kind of been in the spotlight lately for being a town full of, you know, people who can't get the job done, basically. The Cavs, despite getting LeBron back, weren't able to win the championship. And someone who's, I believe, a fan of yours this past week, Machine Gun Kelly, took quite a beating on Monday Night Raw. So not a good week for Cleveland, huh?
Well, on Raw, we have to remember that is scripted. So it wasn't like, you know, MGK got legitimately beat up. But he is doing an amazing job of getting his name out there. And also, obviously, him doing the remake of Till I Die with my name in it, which is very awesome. But, you know, I think Cleveland's doing a lot of great things. And listen, I have been a firm believer since the moment me and Stipe both started at this gym, which was like a month separate from each other. Like, within the same month, we both said that we would be the first ones to bring gold back here. And you know what? I stand firm by that. I actually, like, halfway through the series, I said, you know, not that I ever would want the Cavs to lose, but I know that when I say that, me and Stipe will bring gold back here. And my teammate's in a great position right now to get a title shot. I'm in a great position to get a title shot. I mean, this isn't the first time the UFC has told me win this fight and we'll give you the next title shot. This is not the first time.
So
they, definitely not it.
They have told you, win this and you're going to fight Ronda.
Yes. This is a contender. This is a title, or a, what is it, contenders eliminator, or however you say it.
Title eliminator?
Title eliminator, there we go. Yes, this fight is. I mean, Dana, so when we originally were, when I was at the fight out in L.A., I went over to Sean and I was like, if I don't get this fight, I'm punching somebody. And I went to the press conference. I went to the press conference by myself and I stayed there and I waited for my opportunity to talk if there was. And I was going to say the same thing that I keep saying is that I want my title shot. I deserve it. And unfortunately, Beth has been able to talk her way into it because Rhonda's taking it personal, which is fine because then I just get to see more, you know, just get to see more action and just see how these girls fight and fight under pressure. So, I mean, it does expose them more than it does me. But Dana told me that when we went to Austin that Ronda would be fighting Betcha, but he promised me I got the next shot if I beat Misha.
So, Tom, she actually did the Ryan Bader before Ryan Bader even did it. She went to the press conference.
I sat with Ronda's people, too. I sat right there with Shayna and right behind her mom. And I made my presence known. It was bullshit. Of course, Betcha was there. I mean, her big mouth, you know, saying stuff too. So, I mean, it was a matter of who was going to be the louder one, which unfortunately she got it. But I'm a firm believer everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. I was a bit surprised at that, but seeing the, you know, I had seen that you were on the floor. Hey, Brian, what the hell are you doing?
Crumbling a piece of paper. Sorry.
Come on, knock it off. You know, I was a bit surprised after seeing, you know, you were on the media tour at South by Southwest with Ronda, and I thought for sure that you were going to get announced as the next title contender, and then to see, you know, Betch get the fight down in Brazil kind of surprised me, along with, you know, a similar situation. I thought that for sure Stipe was going to be getting a title shot at heavyweight. I just thought after the performance he had against Mark Hunt that, you know, it was inevitable, and I was... You know, I'm pretty surprised to see that it looks like Arlovsky is going to be the one getting the title shot. So,
well, it's not for sure yet. I mean, you know, they told Stipe this weekend that you know, it was a toss up. It's between Arlovsky and him, but nothing's for sure. Obviously, Dana was very awesome to me. He told me when we were at South by Southwest. He told me, he said, Jessica, he's like, listen, I want you to be the first to hear it from me, because, you know, I was at that fight for a reason in LA, and there's other things that I'm just not going to say, but there's a reason I was there, and there was I was ready to fight if need be, and I feel like they definitely want to fight me. I think that with Anderson Silva being out of the fight, they needed someone to save the card, and what better than to make, you know, Betcha and Ronda in Brazil against each other, since Anderson Silva can't fight in that card.
Yeah, so that's right. You were out in L.A., and if Kat didn't make weight or something, you were going to jump in there. Is that the story?
Yeah, I mean, if anything were to happen, I was ready. I mean, the UFC knew I came straight off of my fight in Mexico. Couldn't remember shit. It's so long. My fight in Mexico, I was ready to be, you know, if they needed me, I was ready. If they needed to call upon me or they needed a girl to fight, I was their girl.
Yeah. So believe me,
when I came in there, I felt like that, you know, knowing that and the way that we had talked, you know, my chance is coming, but it's all right. I just had more time to prepare. For me, I the way my training is set up and the way that everything is for me is at my gym, the more time I have off, the more time I prepare. I don't live away from my gym. I don't have to travel out of state. I literally have to travel 5 minutes down the road. So I'm always in the gym. I'm always sparring. I feel like I'm always fight ready.
I'd be careful putting out the exact time it takes you to get to the gym, because Google Maps is a wonderful resource and can do a lot of scanning in a small area. So.
I'll tell you what, we've had people lately come in. I've had Marcus has had to kick out a couple crazies that were just sitting there watching my trying to watch me. Like one guy sat there behind a bag one day and was just like staring at me. I was like, this guy won't stop staring. And let's just say you've met my coach. So I mean, you know, you can definitely tell his attitude.
Yeah.
I thought for sure that somebody would recognize me hiding behind that bag before they came. So and Jessica, you also just mentioned, you know, you're talking about your fight with Leslie Smith. Obviously that's best known for being the incident where her ear kind of opened up and popped. But that fight was in Mexico City, and there's been a lot of talk, you know, over the past week about the altitude and how it affects the fighters down there in Mexico. And, you know, there was like four or five fighters throwing up after the fights. Did you experience any issues like that, during that fight or after?
No, man. Like, I felt amazing in my fight. Like, everyone was sitting there and saying that, like you said, they felt sick. They felt sick and they're having problems. They were having problems with like you said, the breathing and stuff. No, I felt nothing. The whole training week, I was good. Everything was fine. But I also, before the fight, sorry, I was kind of doing something. Before the fight, I started probably about 6-7 months, and I've been doing it ever since. Beet shots. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them, like beet juice. I do beet shots.
What is that?
Beet juice. Have you ever heard of beet? I mean, you ever heard of beet juice?
I've heard of it. What does it do for you?
So basically, beets already, then naturally themselves have nitrates in it. Obviously, nitrates add more oxygen to your blood, which will, you know, there's obviously an illegal way to take it, which is by doing injections. I eat it through food. So before that fight, knowing I was going into altitude, I started with a company called Beat It. It's called Beat It USA. I actually started purchasing them from them. And what they do is they have a condensed little like mini shot, and I promote it all over my social media, but it's a condensed mini shot that has 400 milligrams of nitrate in it naturally. So I started overloading with it and just overloading and overloading and overloading. So when I went to Mexico, you know, I was a cardio machine. I felt absolutely fine. I mean, I've never really had an issue with that. So, I mean, it would be rather surprising to me if I went somewhere and fought and didn't feel like my wind was one of my most, you know, best attributes that I could bring to a fight.
Yeah,
I really like how she put that product placement, like just weaved it right in. That was
yeah. But you know
good.
What? Check this out, you guys. They don't sponsor me. Like I buy them. I personally buy them. Every product that I talk about, none of them are sponsors me. Isogenics and Beat It, which are my two main like supplements. I purchased them. They are not my sponsors. I found them and I promote them, and I hope people see how amazing they are. And I tell people about them all the time just because I truly believe in it. I wish they would sponsor me. I'm trying to get them to sponsor me.
Well, they should. It seems like you're getting the word out about them.
Well, they definitely they're out of Chicago, and they just came to the United States, because before they were only in Canada and Europe, and they just came over to the USA, and started marketing over here. It's very, very big amongst like the Tour of France guys. Like a lot of them used to take that, and like they use it for a lot of like cycling and high cardio.
A cyclist, very clean athletes.
Well, listen, just because Armstrong killed it.
I'm being facetious, but hey, just to wrap this up, I mean, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
Okay, whatever Tom said. Now, let's just say you fought her, and she did that ridiculous stare down to you, and she's like a quarter of an inch away from you. I mean, don't you think you should have permission to deck her right there? And of course, there my phone's.
I don't think I would deck them. I think I might like lick their face or something. Because there's nothing worse than someone licking your face and you just smell their breath on you. It's so gross.
Yeah, I hate this the gimmick, the stare down that she does. Tom, what do you think, Tom?
Hey, well, like you said, it's a gimmick, but you remember it, don't you? And she's done, out of all the, really, out of all the 115ers, she's by far done the best job of marketing herself, I feel.
She really has.
People want to see her fight.
As a great athlete. She does a good job.
Awesome.
I mean, that fight was unreal. That fight was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, she did so much.
That was probably one of the best fights I've seen out of a female. But yet again, even if everyone's like questioning her fight ability on the ground, what does it matter? Listen, it's about executing a game plan, and that girl executes a game plan like no other. She really does. I feel like that's something that not every female fighter has. They don't have the ability to basically go out there and show conviction and show that they have a game plan. They're going to stick to something.
A lot of male fighters don't do that either, Jessica. You know, it's not restricted to just the female fight community. There's a lot of male fighters that still don't grasp. They don't grasp that part of the fighting game. You know, they think it's just you go out there and you give it your best and you try every technique that you can do and hope things work out for the best. But sometimes that's not the case. It's not what you need to do. You need to kind of even refine your toolbox and make it smaller sometimes in order to get the result that you want. And a lot of up and coming fighters just they don't realize that they rush through things and they make mistakes where they don't have to. And she is definitely not one of those people. She is like she's phenomenal.
Yeah, she does a great job of executing a game plan and then stepping outside when she needs to. I mean, she does a great job. My coaches and us have always believed good striking or great striking and a good takedown defense will win any MMA fight all day long. And I believe that. I really do believe that. I think that no matter who you're fighting, I mean, if someone could be a better wrestler, and I always use Uriah Faber versus Jose Aldo. Like, Uriah Faber is an amazing wrestler, grappler, and Jose is an amazing, striker and kicker. And I think that was, a perfect opportunity to utilize a good game plan against someone like that.
So, Jessica, you were in Phoenix, so... What's Joanna? She fought Claudia Gadelha. I don't know if I'm saying that one right. And a lot of people thought that Claudia actually beat her in Phoenix. Were you in the arena for that?
No, yeah, I was fortunate enough to be front row. Dana really hooked it up with some good tickets. I had great seats. I thought she won the fight. I said to her that day, I said, "You will win every fight in the women's division if you work on your takedown defense." And that is really ideally what all she needed to do.
Yeah.
And she did. And she did a great job. I had her winning. I had her winning. I didn't have it any other way.
Yeah, it was a close one. She's quite a personality. So, she's you know, and I think she gets it. You know, she some of the things she says with that accent too. It's entertaining. You know, I think
it
she
is
said
funny.
Yes.
I feel like her accent makes her that much more badass. People like her that much more.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Hardy asked her about some of her opponents, some of the opponents that might be waiting for her, and she said, "Are they ready?" You know, just and then just shut
they're
up.
I think she was like, "They're not ready. They're not ready."
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
Yeah, so you're right. The
no,
accent.
I mean, I think yet again, there's a lot of girls out there. I mean, I'm very, very, very good friends with Brandon Marcos. She's an amazing person, and I think she has a great ability to be a champ one day. And, you know, as long as I'm helping her, and I know I'm a phenomenal striker, I know that I know how to beat a striker. So, I mean, I do think that there's room for other girls to beat her. I mean, nobody's unbeatable in this sport.
Absolutely. Hey, Tom, do you have anything for Jessica before we let her go?
I mean, no. I mean, it's been great so far. Are you kicking her off?
Well, I assume she's busy. She's got stuff to do. I mean, I don't have anything to do. I doubt that you have anything to do, but she probably does.
Good point.
I'm making my pre-workout right now before I get myself started.
All right, Jess. Hey, we appreciate it, and we'll see you in Chicago. We'll be rooting for you.
That's awesome. I can't wait, and I'll make sure Marcus doesn't kick you. Again, because now you've opened the floodgates. I'm just saying. Now he knows what your face looks like, and you've already let him kick you once. So he'll probably welcome you with a kick.
All right. I'll try my best to check it. All right.
Don't check it. Just run.
Run
real fast and just act like that guy to the bathroom. There's a person.
All right.
Tom, happy training, and I will see you in a few weeks. And happy weight cutting.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you too. The weight cut won't be bad for me. So kind of like you, I'm kind of like almost in between weight classes. And I've decided to go the Jessica I approach.
There we go. I'm right there, man. I'd have to say the same. I'm in great shape right now. I mean, I might go eat ice cream today. Might even do it.
All right. Ice cream.
All
okay.
Right, guys.
Thanks, Jess.
Later. Thanks. Bye.
You're scripting your promos?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you got to script them. When you know, I'm not Dusty Rhodes here, man. And, you know, it's interesting, and we are recording now. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Dusty Rhodes. He would not script his promos. Like, I listened to him. He was, he was on one of those Podcast One shows. I forget who he was. No, he was on with Stone Cold, on Stone Cold's podcast. And it was amazing to me that he said, no, I wouldn't script them, and I wouldn't even think about it until I walked out there. I'm like, my God, how did he put together Hard Times without even thinking about it before he went out there and did it?
Some people just have it, Brian. I mean, and Dusty Rhodes had it in spades, you know. The guy was quite a character. And, I don't think a lot of people realize, if they're younger fans, like a lot of the fancy robes and stuff that Ric Flair grew up as a Dusty Rhodes fan. You know, he wanted to be Dusty Rhodes. So in a way, the Ric Flair character that everybody loves was kind of like a ripoff. You know, you could see some of the footage of, and WWE, it seems, doesn't have a lot of footage of this, but they do have footage where, you know, you can see Dusty Rhodes in the ring, sparkly robe, a little derby hat on that's bedazzled, and you know, he's dancing around the ring, and the guy was just phenomenal, super charismatic, and just a legend of the sport.
I loved the video package that WWE put together for Dusty, and it started out, and Dusty said, "I thank God there are people out there like you," meaning the fans. "Growing up in Texas, I sure didn't think 265 pounds of blue-eyed soul would captivate the world like I have." And I thought, man, that's poetry.
Yeah, not only that, but like his delivery was just phenomenal. You could tell, like, I'm watching him, and every time they play that clip, it looks to me like it's as genuine as can be. You know, this guy really was, like, taken aback that there were people out there that were paying to see him and paying to see him on top. And you know, obviously it's not like I have a personal relationship with the guy, but everything you read and everything you see coming from wrestlers and people that run into him, there's very little bad that is said about Dusty Rhodes. And, you know, I think that's a testament to the person himself.
Put it this way, man. You know, last weekend I was at the USA Wrestling World Team Trials, and I was watching some of the matches with WWE Hall of Famer Jerry Briscoe, and is also their head talent scout. And he told me that this was the hardest thing that he's dealt with, the hardest death in the business that he's dealt with, other than his brother Jack about 4 or 5 years ago. I was like, wow, I mean, that's really saying something, because, you know, Jerry was always kind of in Jack's shadow, but he never got upset about it. He idolized Jack more than anybody. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow. And it just seemed to hit people. You know, Dusty was in his late 60s, but, you know, it just still didn't seem like he was with us long enough.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and, you know, this is one of those things, and I've mentioned this before, but, like, this is one of the deaths that kind of transcends. You find out afterwards what guys kind of transcended wrestling. And we saw it with Macho Man. You know, when he passed, a lot of mainstream media outlets were covering it. And a lot of people that don't necessarily fancy themselves wrestling fans nowadays were talking about it. And it was a hot topic item. And I kind of feel the same way with Dusty Rhodes. And it seems like it's maybe even bigger, you know, than a bigger outcry and outpouring of emotion. With Dusty Rhodes' death than it was Macho Man or, you know, Ultimate Warrior or any of these other big name stars that have died recently. So,
and I think a lot of that was Dusty's ability to transcend the stereotypical audience that you think that he would appeal to, you know, from Texas and wrestling in some of the Southern territories. You would think, you know, he would only appeal to the stereotypical Southern wrestling fans. When really, you know, I saw some interviews. He grew up, he went to a predominantly black church. And that's where the inspiration for a lot of his promos came from. Like, you know, a lot of, you know, some of the churches, there are a lot, the black churches, the you know, they're yelling and the singing is really loud. Probably a lot different than your typical, you know, predominantly white church.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've never been to a black church.
Well, yeah, I have never been either. I've seen some, you know, seen some clips of it, and they seem to get really into their singing, and they, you know, they like to yell, and that they said that was a big inspiration for Dusty, because he grew up in an area that was predominantly black and Hispanic. So, you know, not only could he connect to the Southern wrestling fans, but he connected to the black fans, the Hispanic fans, and he really was what he said. He was he was just the common guy that appealed to every segment of society.
Yeah.
So, yep. So you know, rest in peace to Dusty Rhodes. It's you know, I still watch his promos, and yeah, for no other reason than to just be, it's kind of like mental stimulation, trying to think like, man, how did he come up with this shit?
You know? Do you listen to his promos to pump yourself up before we start recording?
Okay. I should do that. Maybe my performances on air would be a lot better. But there'll be times, you know, and this is a shoot. Like, you know, maybe FRB had a little bit of a late night the night before, and I need to get up and go somewhere. And sometimes you need a little kick in the butt. And I'll fire up YouTube and put in Dusty Rhodes Hard Times, yeah, and just play that.
Surely you must have an impression, Brian. Can you do a good Dusty impression?
Well, it's not a good one, but I mean,
hear it. Come on.
First of all, Ric Flair, no respect, no honor. There was no honor among thieves in the first place. You got one?
You kind of sounded like you were Japanese there for a second.
I told you it wasn't good.
No, were those words straight out of Dusty's mouth? Because
yeah, that was from the Hard Times. Probably he said, Ric Flair, no respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves in the first place.
Yes, baby. I don't have very much that I can add to that, if you will.
It's about as good as you're going to get from me. So
that was pretty good, if you will. I mean, and the other thing, you know, because you know we're the same age, so I really didn't see him in his prime as a wrestler.
Me neither.
Yeah. So, but my memory of Dusty Rhodes is mainly as an announcer.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, this guy was the star of WCW Saturday Night. No matter who was wrestling, those 2 hours with Dusty Rhodes on commentary, he was the star, the mothership. He made you want to watch a show that basically had no angles going on. It didn't mean anything in the long run towards the end, but it was an institution. And I would still tune in and watch every single week. And, you know, it's taken me a few years looking back, but really Dusty was the star of that show every 2 hours on Saturday night.
He sure was, and I used to love how he would always butcher the names of the luchadors and the wrestlers from Japan. And I think, was it Mike Tenay who would say, no, Dusty, that's not how you say it. He would just roll with it and would never correct the way he would say it.
Yeah, but it wasn't done in like a, you know, a heelish way, like he was discrediting them. Right. It was more like, you know, I'm from the South, and this is how people in the South are. They're just not going to, like, they're not going to take the time to learn about how to say this correctly and this and that. And, you know, it was one of his endearing qualities, I guess I would say, you know, just stand true to himself.
But, you know, I said it before, that line, I never thought 265 pounds of blue-eyed soul would captivate a nation like I have. That's poetry. But, yeah, just to transition a little bit, of course, Bellator had a big event on Friday night, headlined by probably the fight of our lifetime, the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock, at 51 years old, comes out of retirement to fight street fighting legend Kimbo Slice. What'd you think of the fight, Tom?
Fight was awesome. Everything I'd ever hoped to see in a mixed martial arts contest. We had some grappling exchanges, high-level grappling. We had a display of big-time striking and probably one of the best single legs I've ever seen in my life.
That single leg was so amazing that the second that his fingertips touched Kimbo's thigh, Kimbo went down. It was that powerful of a single leg takedown. Did they get all their spots right, though?
That I'm not quite sure of. I was waiting for, after the fight, maybe a tope to the outside by Shamrock. But I think, you know, obviously he's a little old for that now. So I don't know if they got everything in that they planned or if they called it on the fly or what the deal was. But definitely an interesting fight.
And, you know, Joe Rogan did a Fight Companion podcast. And, you know, he brought up something like, of course, the choke. I mean, I talked to a bunch of guys who know a lot more. One of them, Vinny Magalese, he's like, no, there is no explanation of why he didn't sink the choke in. When he had the back mount, he had Kimbo flattened out. There is none. He decided not to.
First of all, let's think about this. Have you ever seen – does Shamrock have any wins by rear naked?
I'm not sure.
Okay. The guy hasn't had – really a top performance in, what, 15 years? I don't find it that out of the realm of possibility that he just has deteriorated to that point or he was never even at that point. You know, the game was a lot different when Shamrock was a big name. And techniques change over time. And you could see, obviously, Shamrock was going for the technique that he learned from Brutus the Barber Beefcake back in the 1980s when you slap it on that sleeper hold. But, you know, the game's just passed him by, perhaps.
There was another instance that Rogan pointed out that was really suspicious. They were like tied up, like almost like a collar and elbow tie up in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And they were kind of like, it was like, what are you guys doing? It was like you're dancing or something. Like they were dancing. It's like, were they trying to decide what the next spot was going to be?
Shamrock, I was watching it last night again. And Shamrock had like an overhook and a weird tie where he had Kimbo's other hand kind of wrapped up. So I was watching, I was thinking like, all right, it's kind of odd that they're not throwing a lot of knees or strikes in this clinch. But Shamrock did have his arms tied up And I was trying to watch, you know, their head positioning and movement, trying to see if, you know, maybe they were talking in that position. But, you know, it was tough to see. There's definitely some things that are fishy on the surface about the fight, but then you also have to look at it. It's a 51-year-old guy fighting a 40-something-year-old street fighter. And, you know, clearly they're both past their prime, even though, you know, Kimbo tried to rekindle some old glory by sporting the Brian Ebersole harrow, maybe trying to steal some of his powers.
I was talking to somebody who's, you know, a former fighter, been around this business for quite a while, and he said, you know, I think it was a work, but let's not discount the possibility that we just saw a match between two shitty fighters.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I think, honestly. You know, the word work gets thrown out there a lot. And, you know, who's to say that in this instance, maybe one of the guys knew what the deal was and the other one didn't. You never know. I'm just looking at Shamrock's record here, Brian. And so far, I am back to 1994. Oh, and I have now found he had two rear naked choke wins in 1994 against Takaku Fuke, who is, I do not believe he is related to Tobias Fuke from Arrested Development, but maybe I'm wrong. Are you a fan of that show, Brian?
No, I don't really watch much TV, but I've heard of it.
Damn it. That would have been such a great joke if you would have, heard what I was talking about. So what I'd like you to do is now watch Arrested Development, watch all the seasons, and then come back and listen to the show when you're done.
Is it on Netflix?
Yeah, it's great too.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so he did defeat Boss Rutan by a rear naked choke. So he has three rear naked choke wins in 1994.
Saying the technical aspect of the rear naked could have changed in the past 20 years.
While we're talking, I'm going to go look and see if I can find the video of Shamrock versus these guys and, see how he applied it.
All right. Yeah. While you're doing that, I just wanted to comment a little bit about the production of this Bellator event, and it was off the charts. I mean, it was so fun to watch, you know, the walkout, the ramp, the video screens. I mean, Animal from the Legion of Doom coming out with, you know, to his music, which, you know, is actually Hawk saying "What a Rush," but the production was just amazing. And, you know, I think as their roster gets better, because I mean they still have a very thin roster of guys who can actually draw an audience, and as they add to that roster, I think these are going to be some of the most fun shows to watch. I mean, I love it. It's pride, you know?
Yeah, I think it's great. I love the idea of the ramp. I love the production aspect. The only thing that kind of worries me, or not worries me, but bothers me, is that they just don't have more shows, you know? They're not running. You know what? Hey, Ken Shamrock put on this sleeper hold the exact same way he did against Boss Rutan in 1994. He had the hand across Boss Rutan's the front of his forehead, and he finished the choke.
Yeah, well, maybe that would work. I mean, Boss was very new to the ground game back then, right?
Yeah. So Ken Shamrock does have five wins by rear naked choke, but you know, I'll keep looking and see if I can find some other video of him, but he applies that rear naked choke the same shitty way. So,
so it seems like they're not going to have another major event like this where they're going to pull out all the gimmicks until September 19th, and they're going to have Dynamite with the cage, the Bellator cage, and a Glory kickboxing ring side by side. I mean, this is going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty damn awesome, and I can't wait to see it. I'm a big fan of these, you know, these like weird kind of, it's not like a freak show, but it's something new. It's something interesting. Remember Yama pit fighting, how awesome that was, Brian?
It was one of the, maybe only the 2,000 people in the entire world who can say that they were there.
Congratulations.
And I was fucking with Scott Farrell the entire night. And I didn't do it, but this guy next to me, because
was he on the bench? Is that what you're talking about?
Farrell on the bench, yeah. So Scotty Farrell, when he would go into the Yama pit to introduce the next, you know, like he would go, Enrique Suave, or, you know, with that ridiculous voice, he would have to take off his dress shoes. So there was this dude next to me who decided to steal Scotty Farrell's dress shoes. Really? And Farrell comes out of the pit, and he's like, you could tell, like, he's like, oh my, where the fuck did my shoes go? And like, so, you know, he's selling it big, you know, like, he's like, oh God, I don't have any shoes now. And then this guy, just some random drunk fan, you know, after about 5 minutes, goes up to Farrell and says, hey man, here's your shoes back.
What did Farrell do?
He laughed. He was a good sport about it.
Okay.
But that was at, I think, Trump Plaza, April 2008?
In Atlantic City?
Yeah, yeah. It was a mess, man.
Well, you know, now Trump's at the forefront of the presidential race for 2016, and he was at the forefront of revolution in MMA with Yama pit fighting.
Yeah, you know, I don't get too much into politics with this, but I'm on board. I'm on board with Trump, and I'd like to see him have Vince McMahon as vice president.
I'd like to see Trump, you know, do big things if it means the return of Atlantic City, because Atlantic City's down in the dumps, and that's a fun place to go under the right circumstances.
Yeah, yes. Man, I was there. I mean, I'm talking 2008, and you know, the boardwalk was all screwed up, and then Atlantic Avenue, like, you didn't want to go out onto Atlantic Avenue, you know, when the sun went down. It's a mess. They got places closing down left and right. But, you know, of course, you know, just get this out of the way. Bobby Lashley beat Dan Charles. And I'm
Destroyer!
And I'm still at a loss to how Lashley, after all these fights, still manages to get matched up against complete bums. He took on James Thompson maybe about 5 years ago, and then he was like, okay, enough of that. I don't want any more competitive fights.
Well, he was supposed to fight James Thompson again here, and I think Lashley would have beaten him this time.
When did Thompson pull out of the fight?
Like a week ago.
Oh, that recent. Oh, yeah. Okay. So,
and Dan Charles isn't he's not like a terrible can, you know. The guy's decent. It's just, yeah, it's weird with Lashley. Like, he's good at what he's gonna do, obviously, and if you can't stop that, you're kind of screwed. And you know, I think that's what the fight boiled down to, is it's gonna take somebody that can stop his takedowns or just gas him out to beat him.
Yeah,
cut and dry.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll just go through the main card here. So Michael Chandler beat Derek Campos, and he pretty much just dominated, got the rear naked choke the way that you're supposed to do it. Anything that you can take from this fight?
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, what do you want me to do?
I mean, it's a fight that he should have won. I guess if he would have lost, it would have told us that he's just – he doesn't have much left in the tank.
Yeah, Chandler, he's in a tough spot because he's now lost to the title holder at 155 two times with Will Brooks. But, you know, it seems to me like still Chandler is kind of the bigger name in that situation. So it's kind of similar, you know, in a way to, like, remember when Uriah Faber was beaten by Mike Brown, and Mike Brown was WEC champion. But you could still tell that you know, Uriah Faber garnered more interest from the casual fan, and you know, probably WEC wouldn't have been too upset with him beating Mike Brown and being the champion. I feel kind of the same way with Bellator in this situation with Michael Chandler.
You were going in the right direction. This is Spike Force.
Yeah. I realized after I got done saying it, you know, they are very similar promotions. Obviously, there, you know, a lot of similarities with Scott Coker at the head of it.
But I think they've taken it beyond what, you know, the gimmicks that you see in Strikeforce. Strikeforce is kind of like, I mean, I think it was a pretty straightforward promotion. they're getting really gimmicky. I mean, 51-year-old Shamrock.
One night tournament.
Yeah, the one night tournament. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because I think it's an antiquated approach to presenting.
I have a different opinion. Let's go through the card and let's talk about that.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the other fight, Daniel Strauss looked great. He beat Henry Corrales. He dominated the first round, and then in the second round choked him out, guillotine. Was there not really much to it, just a fight that Daniel should win, and he did.
Keep going.
Now, the one, this was actually a really good fight, and if this happened in the UFC, people would be talking about it for weeks, but Patricio Pitbull beat Daniel Vajcic. Vajcic. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think that the W kind of is a V sound. But it looked like Pitbull, he got saved by the bell. I mean, I think at the end of the first round, if he would have got hit one or two more times, if that guy would have had maybe five more seconds, you know, we got a new champion. Pitbull was out of it. And then they start the second round, and Pitbull is getting lit up again. And then, you know, he just stayed in the pocket, and huge left hook, and Vajcic just hit the deck, and that was that.
Yeah, impressive finish. I think overall the people are pleased with the Bellator show. And even though you have these old-timey guys on top, or it's a freak show fight, it does get eyes on the undercard, and it accomplishes that goal. And I think that Pitbull, did himself really well with the finish, and people will be excited to see him fight again in the future.
Do you know the contender off the top of your head for the featherweight that they?
No, but wouldn't it be? I mean, Strauss has got to be up there, right?
Yeah. I really didn't think too much about what the next step would be. But we talked. Do you want to talk any more about Kimbo and Shamrock, or you basically had all?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much left to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting for what it was. Even if it was a work, it was fine. You know, it was about what you could expect from a 51-year-old man and Kimbo, who's what, 44?
He's either 44 or 43, somewhere in there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only thing, Kimbo didn't look like his typical self. I don't know if a little bit different supplement regimen or just enjoying life a little bit.
And he's old. He's old and hasn't fought in a few years, man.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I guess getting back to the one-night tournament, I really don't like it. You know, I've seen these tournaments, in Dream, and the wrong guy wins, and he's really not the best fighter out of, but he goes on forever saying that, oh, I'm the Dream tournament champion, and people keep saying it. It's like, well, you really weren't the best fighter that night. The circumstances.
Whoa. If you win that tournament, you're the best fighter that night. What do you mean? This isn't like, people use this argument in fights too. Oh, he was just better that night. Well, that's the night that you're supposed to be better. That's the night you're supposed to show up. If it means if you sign a contract and you know you have to fight two different guys, then that's what you need to prepare to do. And whatever you need to do to make that happen, that's what it's got to be. It's not like you go in there and even if you're the best fighter, you're always going to win. That's just not the case, man.
So what about it? Like, the first round matchup, you throw a nice punch, you knock the guy out. But your opponent had to, he had to fight 15 minutes. He had to grind it out.
Yeah. You know going in what the possibilities are, that's just how it is. I think it's awesome. I think it's great. I think it changes things up. I think it adds intrigue and mystique to the whole thing. And I like the idea of tournaments. When I fell in love with this sport back in, the early 90s, the mid 90s, it was based around tournaments. This one night tournament. I think it familiarizes you with the fighters. You get to see them in action a little bit more. You get to, see what their style is, and you get to draw a better connection with the guys. And I think that this is the right way to do it for Bellator. You get these guys in there. You get Phil Davis in there. You get King Mo in there. You get Emmanuel Newton and Linton Vassell in there. and you let him have it out that one night, on the same night that Tito's fighting for the belt, and then you have the champion, you have the challengers, and you know, you set yourself up for a bigger main event in the future. So,
yeah, and I was just trying to look here if the ratings for the Bellator or the amount of viewers had come out yet. It doesn't look like it's come out just yet. But yeah, so you would like to see a lot of these tournaments, these one night tournaments, or?
Yeah, I think they're cool. It's something different. I think people can get behind it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm in the minority, and maybe I'm just, you know, stuck in a time of fighting that shouldn't be around anymore. But yeah, I'm a fan of, you know, bare knuckle fights, no rules, MMA. You know, obviously I understand there's a lot of drawbacks to it, but you know, I like Pride Rules fights. I like seeing, you know, these old bare knuckle IVCs in Brazil.
You know, it's funny you mention that, Tom, because I got the Amazon Prime membership, so they give you like some free videos, you know, in addition to like the free shipping. I think it's $100 a year. And one of the free DVDs that you could watch on demand was an IVC event. It was Chuck Liddell versus Pele. And yeah. Vanderlei Silva was on it. Actually, I think it was a comp, you know, like a best of. Uh-huh. So if any of you guys have Amazon Prime, pull that up. It was pretty cool seeing Chuck Liddell and Vanderlei Silva. Yeah, and it, you know, totally, you know, bare knuckle, nothing. There was one, I don't know, you've probably seen the fight, but Pele was underneath this netting, and it's like the M1 Global.
Yeah.
Ring, and Liddell is punching him with the netting over Pele's face.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man. No wonder they outlawed this shit.
But it was so awesome.
Yeah. So September 19th, San Jose, Dynamite. They're going to have a Glory ring and a Bellator cage. And I think it's a great gimmick. I mean, I don't know how much value Glory adds to this. Glory is not a very hot brand. You know, I think that the biggest problem with Glory is they don't have any stars.
Yeah, and it's tough there because, you know, they're major TV distributions in a country where, you know, they need American stars, obviously, and America's just not the best kickboxing nation at this time. You know, especially in the heavyweight divisions, most of the guys are Europeans. And then when you start going lighter down in the weight class, you know, you start adding in other ethnicities. And it's just tough for them to make stars. I know they've tried, you know, with some of the guys, with Joe Schilling, obviously they've done a good job of getting his name out there. But past that, you know, I don't see who they have that really appeals to the American market too much.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's like, I think Jonathan Snowden had said something like he really appreciates the action. He likes the, you know, the watching the kickboxing, but he's like, every guy is basically the same.
Yeah, yeah. Is now, even though it's summer now, is Jonathan still Snowden?
I don't know. Maybe we'll have to get him on here and ask him. Have you read his book, Shooters?
Yes, I have. Shooters, Toughest Men in Professional Wrestling.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that book. And allegedly, the genesis of that was Ed in San Antonio making some kind of thread on Meltzer's website about who are the toughest, legit tough guys to ever be in professional wrestling.
Oh, well.
So Ed actually did something right.
Yeah, hey, congrats.
Now, have you met Ed or heard of any of his hijinks?
Yeah, I'm currently embroiled in a bitter Twitter feud with him.
Is he bothering you?
Not really, no.
Nobody's going to appreciate this, but UFC 103, we're in Dallas, and I'm a few rows back of the media, and somehow Ed in San Antonio got a media credential, and he rolls in there. In basketball shorts, sneakers, and a tank top, and he's got his mullet. I mean, I think after that, they changed the entire dress code.
It's because of him?
I'm convinced, because I've never seen anybody role in their like a wife beater and basketball shorts ever again. I think somebody said something.
Yeah. Well, as well they should have.
But I think he got in because he under Wrestling Observer.
Well, hey, more power to the guy.
Yeah. So, did you have anything else about Dynamite or the Bellator show? Or?
Well, I think the Dynamite idea is great. I don't know about putting the cage and the ring side by side. I'll just have the kickboxing fights in the cage.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that because there were some rumors in 2010 that Strikeforce was talking to – it was either Glory or It's Showtime and – maybe
in 2010, it probably would have been It's Showtime.
Okay, and they were offering
which was, I believe, Golden Glory's promotion. So,
well,
maybe I'm wrong.
I thought Golden Glory bought It's Showtime, and then that became Glory World Series. But I don't remember. But they were gonna do some kickboxing matches in the cage, and then I think Showtime came in and said, hey, we really don't want that. We just want some MMA fights.
Yeah, I could see that. But to me, just like from the production aspect, you're going to see those two rings side by side. It's going to be weird looking.
Yeah, it's going to bring it back to the World WCW. I mean, what did they have? Three rings?
Three rings, 60 men, Battle Royal, and they were all terrible.
Yeah.
Although it did bring us the debut of the Yeti.
Almost as good as a Shockmaster.
Yeah. Oh, not quite. Not even close. Come on.
Shockmaster. Unbelievable. Tugboat, if you will.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was, I've been following, I watched a boxing match last night. It was actually a really good fight. Sean Porter beat Adrian Broner by decision. And it was really even odds, which is rare because a lot of the criticism of the Premier Boxing Champions, the promotional organization that Al Haymon heads up, has been that Al is just basically matching his guys against complete jobbers, and that's why viewership has dwindled.
But, you know, I thought – I watched the – I caught the beginning of that show. I didn't see the main event. I was on the road. But I watched the Amir Khan versus Algieri fight. And that show, and I thought it was great. I really like what they're doing as far as promoting boxing goes under this centralized kind of organization compared to the alphabet soup of the past. Obviously promoters are always going to have their favorites. So that's just the way that it is, and you know that going in. I was surprised to see that Broner lost that fight, actually.
Yeah, I think it's great, too, because it's just so easy to put on NBC. And, you know, they're also on CBS. They're also on ABC, ESPN. They're taking over Golden Boy spot on Fox Sports 1. I mean, it would be easier to say what channels aren't on.
Yeah, yeah.
But my point, you know, why I think this has some correlation to MMA is – if you look at Showtime Boxing's schedule, they have one fight, and then they have nothing else. Because Showtime was relying upon Al Haymon, because he has his group of about 150 boxers, and they were relying solely upon him to provide fighters so that they could put out content. So now Al's brought all of those guys to Premier Boxing Champions, and Showtime's got nothing. So I'm thinking, is Showtime going to make a call to Scott Coker and say, hey, can you get 4 to 5 events for us? We'll put MMA back on Showtime because the boxing programming, it's gone. They got one fight on the schedule. It's a shitty fight with Chavez Jr.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been rumors ever since Elite XC and Showtime or Elite XC and Strikeforce been off Showtime because there were rumors that Invicta was being looked at for a deal and some other promotions, but you know none of it's come to fruition. And sometimes in these cases, the channel will just kind of switch gears and go in a different direction. So you know maybe that'll be the case, and maybe it won't be putting more boxing content or fighting content on the station. Maybe they'll just move away from it. Who knows?
Yeah, could be. Maybe just put, you know, try to develop a new series, which Showtime has been, you know, they've done a great job in developing original series, and they've really closed the gap in terms of number of subscribers. I mean, HBO used to be, I mean, so I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but they used to be such a bigger premium cable channel.
Yeah, but Showtime had better late night movies and stuff. So
that's Cinemax, though.
Yeah, but Showtime's even better.
Really? Okay.
But you got Skinemax, right? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, you might even see Kendra Lust on there, and I can't believe you still haven't listened to that masterful interview.
Well, I did start listening, but I was finished about 3 minutes through.
What, listening to my voice? What's wrong with you?
Hey, you know, sometimes we can't help it. We want what we want, Brian.
Yeah, okay. No, but actually, I mean, she seemed, I mean, for a porn star, she seemed really normal.
Yeah, well, some people are in it for different reasons, I guess. Plus, you know, obviously she's, I'm not saying she's, well.
She's more mature.
She's more mature, yeah. Yeah. You know, I think you probably have a different outlook on things when you reach a certain age. At least I know I do, so.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. She got into the business when she was 33. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, some of these girls are getting in at 18 and 19, and it's just a train wreck.
How old are you, Brian?
I'm 32, same as you, man.
Oh, so we've got 1 year. That could be you next year. You could be the next Kendra Lust.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I'm going to be 33 in September, so you're about 8-9 months younger than me.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So when September hits, I'm going to be hitting you up, you know, pushing you towards that job choice.
Yeah, nobody will want to watch the videos. All right, let's get off that topic. But next week, we'll just finish up with this. They had a Hollywood, Florida, that casino where Anna Nicole Smith died, the Seminole Hard Rock. Apparently,
all the the Seminole Hard Rock, not the Seminole. Those are two different things.
What did I call it?
I think you said Seminole.
Oh, like Seminole, a Seminole moment?
No, that would be sentimental.
The Seminole. Am I saying it right now?
Seminole, yes.
The Seminole Hard Rock. Which is infamous for where Anna Nicole Smith overdosed about 7 or 8 years ago. But apparently there's some issue with issuing visas to the Brazilian fighters. So yeah. Now the card's only about like 6 fights?
Yeah, it looked like they had some real, real big issues getting all this stuff handled. Because it was supposed to be the finale for The Ultimate Fighter Brazil, if I remember correctly. And now that's had to been moved. You know, the main event's still intact, which is good because realistically that was the biggest fight on the show. So as long as that's there, I don't think it's going to suffer too much. But yeah, what a situation, right? I think there's a lot of problems across the globe with visa issues. I don't think it's, you know, directly related just to the US or just to the UFC's handling of these things. I think there's a big issue right now, you know, across the globe from what I understand. So.
Yeah, I don't think it's the UFC. I mean, how many years have they been successfully getting foreign athletes into the country to fight? I mean, they're pretty organized. They do a really good job. So I can't believe that this is on them. But, you know, to be honest with you, man, you know, I don't watch all the prelim, you know, and maybe that makes me not as big a fan as some people, and that's fine. I just don't want to watch it. But I'm really excited about Romero versus Machida.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting fight. To me, the most interesting thing is that Machida's coming off like a pretty short layoff after that beating he took at the hands of Luke Rockhold. You know, I didn't think we'd see him back this quick, but obviously he wanted to get back in there and you know, prove his worth. And it's you know, it's not an easy fight by any means. Yoel Romero, while he hasn't like, you know, just destroyed everybody, he continues to find a way to win, whether he's down on the scorecards or he's been dropped in the fight. He seems to keep coming back and getting these wins. So he's obviously a great wrestler. He's a very powerful striker. But Machida is, what is he, a riddle wrapped inside an enigma when you're there in the cage? So.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's a guy, Les Gutchess. He's a former world champion for the United States.
Yeah, I actually work with his, I think it's his nephew.
Brock?
Bryson.
Oh, okay, because he's got another nephew named Brock, who's a four-time national champion.
That's Bryson's brother.
Oh, okay.
Bryson's a fighter. He lives here in Vegas.
Oh, cool. So the reason I bring that up was Romero used to give Les Gutchess fits. So he's still cursing that guy. Like, he's like, you know.
Well, Romero beat Cale Sanderson.
Yeah, and he also used to take care of Les Gutchess. And, you know, I've heard some stories about Les Gutchess and, you know, just certified badass. That if he would have went into MMA, you know, like tougher than Couture, tougher than Lindland, tougher than Henderson, you know.
Did he smell better or worse than Lindland?
Well, I mean, that wouldn't be hard to do, right?
I don't really know from experience. I've just heard.
Oh, you know. No, that rumor is 100% true. He just takes pride in.
I wasn't questioning the validity. I believed it.
Yeah, he just doesn't like to shower or change clothes. It's a very odd thing. Hey,
I don't blame him, man. I mean, I didn't get this filthy gimmick by living a clean lifestyle. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, so, I mean, Romero, I mean, just to give you an idea, he's, what, 36 or 37? So he was wrestling Cale Sanderson, Les Gutchess, and those guys. I mean, Sanderson hasn't wrestled – well, he did come back in 2011, but the Olympics in 2004 was his last year as a regular wrestler, and I think Les hung him up in the early 2000s. And here's Romero.
38, by the way, Brian.
What's that?
Romero's 38.
He's 38. And who knows? You know, I mean, I remember when the Yankees got El Duque. You remember El Duque, Tom?
Yeah.
And, you know, the scouts were like, well, there's no way. I saw him, you know, pitching a national team game in whatever year, and if that math is right, that means he was 13 when I saw him. And it's like, so Romero, I mean, who knows how old this guy might be?
Yeah, I don't know. I always, with the Cuban guys and, you know, pretty much anybody associated with Cuba, you got to question their age because of record keeping. And I mentioned anybody associated with me because the Nogueras, I don't believe that their birth certificates are correct, and they have, you know, ties to Cuban boxing in some way. So,
yeah, I think the Nogueras claim to be born in 76, so like turning 39 this year, and there's no way. There's just no way. I mean, come on. Or do you remember when they came over here, or when Big Nog came over here, UFC 73 against Heath Herring? I think back then he was like 32 or something. It was just like, come on, man. I mean, the guy looked in his early 40s or mid 40s.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You never know. Some people just age faster, I guess. But.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we got that fight card next Saturday. That's the 27th. And then July 4th weekend, which I don't think there's much MMA on. And then the next weekend, of course, is huge show. I'm not falling in line saying it's the biggest show of the year, the biggest show ever. I'm not convinced it's even bigger than Jon Jones and Daniel Cormier in January.
Yeah, really, this show is kind of just built around. I mean, what's the undercard? It's
well, Rory and Robbie Lawler,
and then after that,
is there any? Let me just pull it up real quick.
Yes. I don't know. To me, Brian, this isn't just bullshit. I mean, the most like stacked card is that Chicago show on Fox, like top to bottom.
Yeah, and they lost Jury and Pettis.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, it seems like, you know, all those fights are well matched, and it's going to be a pretty damn good show. And then I look at some of the pay per view cards, and their undercards just aren't as good. I don't think.
You know, one fight that does look really good is Matt Brown versus Tim Means.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I mean, you got some other ones like Brandon Thatch versus John Howard. I mean, that sounds like a gimme for Thatch. Mike Swick versus some guy named Garcia. I don't know which Garcia. There's probably several dozen of them. Bermudez versus Jeremy Stephens.
Could be Cherry Garcia.
Jerry Garcia?
No, Cherry.
Who's Cherry Garcia?
The ice cream.
Oh. You know, actually, I make a recommendation. On Netflix, there's a film about Bob Weir, a documentary, who, you know, of course, was the other lead singer and second guitarist in the Grateful Dead. They talk a lot about Jerry. Pretty interesting stuff. Check that out.
Was that a recommendation to me?
Yeah, or anybody. You know, I don't even know their music that well, but it's just kind of interesting. The brand that they established and the people that followed them and the devotion to them. It's almost like some kind of weird religion.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to make a recommendation for movies, I'll also make a recommendation for a movie called The King of Kong, which is about the King, or what is it? The Donkey Kong World Championships. And the race for the all-time score. Awesome documentary.
And where can this be found?
I believe I watched it on Netflix.
All right.
So I'm not sure if it's still up. If it is, Brian, watch it. You'll love it. This is the ultimate heel.
Say the name of it again.
The King of Kong.
The King of Kong. All right.
Yeah.
I'm gonna check that out.
Yeah, the best heel ever, Billy Mitchell.
Billy Mitchell.
Top heel, all time, 5 stars.
All right. Well, that's the Filthy FRB show for Sunday, June 21st. We'll see you guys. I guess we'll have to talk about that later. But all right, take it easy, guys.